Hello everyone, today we're looking at chapter 2 of Nehemiah. We're looking at the return of a large number of God's people from exile. And there's a problem. Jerusalem is in ruins. What is needed is some leadership and some willing people to successfully do some rebuilding. It's not often this period of the history of God's people comes up. Over the coming weeks, we're going to be looking through the book of Nehemiah. And last week, Lorraine spoke on the start of Nehemiah, which was about his plea to God. But now we get into the story of the return from exile. Before we do that, let's look a bit at the background to Nehemiah's account. Previously in the Bible, God's people have rebelled, and so he has allowed the nation of Babylon, then the largest empire in the region, to sack Jerusalem and to remove people and infrastructure to Babylon. A little bit later, we see a return from exile, and that's what we're looking at here in the book of Nehemiah. In the Bible, we see families return over a period of about 100 years. But there are significant points over this period where large numbers return, and this is one of them. Of course, many never returned, and they made their homes across what is by this point the Persian Empire. And it's to those dispersed Jewish communities that the fledgling Christian faith flourished in the years of the early church. But now, in the time of Nehemiah, we have the king, Artaxerxes, in power, and he is ruling an empire that goes as far as Egypt, Syria, and Lydia. It's an old empire that's just beginning to be troubled by the Greeks rising in the north. Nehemiah himself is a Jew in a powerful position in the king's court. And we have no reason to think that this was unique to Nehemiah. And indeed, we of course have evidence in the book of Daniel that the Jewish noblemen were trained to occupy positions of power. Nehemiah must have been a leader in the Jewish community, both because of the apparent willingness of the people to follow him and his status as a prophet. We also know some information about some of the other characters from Nehemiah 2, and indeed they're going to crop up in weeks to come as well, so it's worth us having a look at their background and what we know about them. Sanballat is seen in ancient texts as the governor of Samaria at the time. Geshem was the leader of a number of powerful Arab groups in the region. Tobiah is a Jew and is probably the governor of the region of Ammon. He is the head of an influential Jewish family that has returned from exile previously. All of these people, the villains of Nehemiah's story, have political reasons to try and thwart Nehemiah and God. Nehemiah's story is about power. Who do God's people allow to be in charge? If they have learnt anything, the answer should be God. But let's find out what happens in this part of Nehemiah's account. The action takes place in the spring and summer of 445 BC. As Lorraine said last week, Nehemiah has spent 4 months in prayer and fasting. Now is the time for action. But this action is not quite the easy chat with the king that is portrayed in Nehemiah 2 in the English. Nehemiah is asking the king to reverse a policy he has made a few years earlier. Have a read of the book of Ezra for further background. The situation is sensitive. If Nehemiah misreads what is happening, or he misreads his standing with the king, it could spell disaster for him. It's so good that we have this first-hand recounting by Nehemiah in the Bible. We can see exactly how he uses his favour, and we can see how he seems deft politically. Look at how the plea to the king, Artaxerxes, it's not a plea for Israel, it's personal, it's for him. In fact, Jerusalem is not mentioned by Nehemiah, and instead he asks the king for this personal favour about his ancestors and setting right what is wrong. Nehemiah skillfully gets the sympathy of the king. And the other thing to note is the presence of the queen here. That might indicate that the meeting wasn't formal and that her being there perhaps influenced the decision. But the key thing is Nehemiah's character and standing with the king. This is a scenario that has been the product of 4 months of prayer, as we found out in the previous chapter and Lorraine explained last time. Nehemiah has prayed through every scenario, every course of action. What we see is the prayerful visualization of the operation in detail. And then what we see is God's hand in action. So, of course, the king grants Nehemiah's request and he's allowed to leave and return to Jerusalem. Nehemiah travels to the area in style. You might have missed this important point in verse 8, where it says the king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me, a military escort. No wonder Sanballat and Tobiah are perturbed. They can see the party coming. The escort adds to Nehemiah's claims and his edicts from the king. This isn't a secret journey from Persia to Judah, but how Nehemiah chooses to enter Jerusalem, well, that is. Why did Nehemiah enter by night? Well, because he wants to be thoroughly appraised of the task ahead before he speaks to the people or the priests. He understands that on paper he has no right to waltz in and tell everyone what to do. He has to do the groundwork. And what is described in relative detail is an inspection of the major defensive points of the city. Nehemiah has to find out what needs doing and who he has to get on board with this plan. It's only after this reconnaissance that Nehemiah speaks to the people. I don't know if you've seen some of the programs about people who hoard everything in their life, collect things. When I watch those programs, I see those people and they can't see the state that they're living in. The familiarity of it all has caused a state where they live in disarray. And that's what's happened to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is in disarray. But Jerusalem is supposed to be a special place for God's people. Psalm 48 describes Jerusalem as the city of the great king and joy of all the earth. And there's many other instances we can find that throughout the Bible. It takes Nehemiah to alert the people to this disarray. The familiarity of it has caused a state where they're happy to live in that situation. Maybe it was Nehemiah's passion. Maybe it was his conviction. Maybe the people could see God's hand on it. But I can't but see the people's response as a miracle, based upon what I have read about God's people up till that point. There's no umming and ahhing. And as Nehemiah reports it, the people respond in a unanimous let's do it. They're ready. They're up for the challenge. They're trusting God. And they're positive about what they're going to do. God must have looked at his people and thought, at last they're doing what they're told. But no sooner do God's people jump to action than opposition begins. Sambalat, Tobiah and Geshem. They're in charge of Samaria, Ammon, Moab and Edom. That's all the surrounding territory of little Judah. And they're now on Nehemiah's case. They ask, are you rebelling against King Artaxerxes? The threat is in the question. How easy would it be for these three powerful men to go with lies to the king? What we expect Nehemiah to do now, after all the power plays, after establishing the king trusts him explicitly, is to show these three that he has the edict of Artaxerxes. But Nehemiah doesn't do that. Instead, Nehemiah states his mandate comes from God. But not only that, but the opposition has no claim on Jerusalem and no right to stop the rebuilding ordained by the Lord. The sacking of Jerusalem and the exile were hard on God's people. These past 10 months have also been hard on God's people. When we come out the other side, and let's hope that will be soon, we may discover ourselves in a similar place, knowing that things won't be the same as the past, but needing to rebuild for the next generation. If Nehemiah's story is anything to go by, there will still be a church that is ready, up for the challenge, trusting God, that has a positive attitude. But there will also be those, not of God, who won't want us to rebuild. In the coming weeks, we will see the influence of objectors and how some of God's people follow them in Nehemiah's account. But don't worry, the majority of God's people dismiss the grumblings of the naysayers, and we see the triumph of God. That is our hope. That when we come to rebuild, our focus is on God. We are ready for the challenge and we don't get distracted by the objectors. Amen.